Are there any objections to that change in language?
So I want to again say that I think question 8 discourages people to apply, and so I think that's something that's not helpful. I want to reiterate again how I think that question 9 is really unfair. As we talked about before, no one would think that it would be fair to ask the JCC to say the JCC. So I think the question is the code, you know, something along the lines of the code is very precise about certain things. If any of the parties involved in that would not follow the procedure of the code, I don't think it's fair to keep putting the number 9.
Yeah. So we discussed was removing the JAO specifically being referenced. The change again for this question, assume that the code requires notice of a hearing to be sent to the accused individual at least 1 week before a hearing, further at least 3 days before a hearing, provided a list of witnesses must be provided and all exhibits that we present at the hearing. And so removing the JAO specifically.
Yeah, because they're saying that they provide first the accused with all the respondents and that criminal court system, so it's changed that I
I would be such a change. If you okay, if you these people is there like in the rest of the like they people they don't necessarily aren't know the terminology yet. So I think accused is not terminology that's used in our system in terms of making sure that we can understand the question and accused with the right frame of mind in terms of what the role they are for the respondent might kind of confusing people.
How about someone charging
with the
violation? So I think you're still saying that this is the J's of something. So I think, again, it's the idea of if one of the parties did not meet an agreed upon timeline or a timeline for the college plan. I also want to talk to you number 11, and I don't know if that kind of changed. But I know that we had talked about it's important that the hearing board members know that they have the right to find not responsible as well as being able to do this. So I think we have to phrase the question is, as a board member, you have the autonomy to find somebody charged not responsible all the way to dismissal. Are you able to do both? And then the idea that transcript annotations are a penalty, that's the university registrar's policy. So the hearing board has no discretion as to whether or not to do. And so that seems to provide an unfair expectation of their roles. And so that's just actually.
Do you have any on
that? I haven't checked it off. I was going to say, those are a little similar to the comments I had no reason to require me, and I have proposals that I think might help us ameliorate some of those that I'd be happy to narrow, and I don't want to process them.
If you'd like to recommend the language question, I'll be able to.
First, I mean, I have a first multiple question. Question 11, the rough idea what I was thinking was, and I quote, hearing boards are called upon to adjudicate difficult matters and make a decision. As a hearing board member, are you comfortable finding someone not responsible? Conversely, are you comfortable finding someone responsible, potentially with a penalty up to and including expulsion? And I would leave the, I would change it to please explain the reasoning. Please explain any concerns you might have.
I just added that I like everything that just said, with the exception of cut out difficult because a lot of cases go to hearing. So
okay. I would even just, I think we should include the first sentence. I don't think it's a question that for you. But can you repeat the language for the second sentence as a member of the
member of the exit board because it's hearing interview boards? Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable finding someone not responsible? Conversely, or if you could alternatively you would like. Are you comfortable finding someone responsible, potentially including a penalty up to expulsion?
You sanctioned that penalty.
I'm saying
finding someone responsible and
including a sanction, an imposing sanction, including a right. Sanction up to expulsion. That also could, I would put potentially for more exposure. They're not saying that we have to need to expel everyone.
If you can explain or
any concern you might have.
What was the first sentence that you'll tonight? What was
And as the hearing boards are called upon to adjudicate matters and make a decision. Who's the training?
Are we getting rid of the discuss which violation? I believe.
Yes.
Okay, so maybe.
Well, what is the purpose of this question? Not this week, but I believe the purpose of the question that we're getting at was asking the individual, are you comfortable with reaching the conclusion of a sanction of expulsion if necessary?
In that case, could you make it this simple thing? Would you be comfortable with your
I think so, but I think what we wanted to get at now was changing the question to say, are you comfortable in cases where, for whatever reason, the individual is not responsible or is responsible? Because sometimes you might have a feeling the individual is responsible, but the evidence might not show that, or whatever happened to here, the individual is not deserved to be found responsible. So we want to clearly ask, are you comfortable finding individuals not responsible or responsible? Understanding the effects of both of those conclusions.
Yes, I think that'll summarize in essence the goal that we're trying to, in essence, here. Are you comfortable going through all ends of the spectrum? Similar, I think the first question, I think the first draft is trying to get at what do you think, what do you think is on the extreme end of high penalties? I think it's also valid to first ask why, are you comfortable saying that someone is innocent? I guess suggesting how that I look at it on the screen, I would say, where it said responsible, not responsible, I would put I'll violate the code of conduct again because responsible, not responsible are terms of our code.
Do you think it's possible to provide in one sentence?
Absolutely.
I feel like, as a member of the hearing board, are you comfortable finding someone, I don't know the exact language, but finding someone in a range from being not responsible up to being responsible, potentially including sanctions?
Yes.
I'm not sure that question is going to be interpreted or easily interpreted. Because responsible is not.
Well, that's hard to say. You are not responsible for violating the code, that context in terms of.
I mean, you would never expel someone for being responsible. So, which seems like a concern.
Yes, it's responsible. Yeah, it's
all your fault. I think what you're after, well, what I would be after this question is just whether they're comfortable reaching a conclusion of expulsion. And that's what you want. And explain your reasons. And that's it. Because our point, what you're after is not a complex interpretation of the code, but the sentiment. The judgment that you bring to bear. So then I would simplify this one a bit.
I think we're trying to complicate this too much. I think we're complicating this question. I think the purpose of the question, I think anybody would be obviously comfortable to find someone not responsible. I think that kind of question is kind of redundant in this. I think the real purpose why we're even asking this question is someone responsible, is someone like okay and comfortable with finding someone to be have a conclusion. So I think that's the real question that we're trying to get at. I think we should just simplify this and just make it be kind of where you're going at. It's just, would you be comfortable with, would you be comfortable with finding someone in the United States, and then the conclusion that we're going to be expelled? Because that's the most uncomfortable kind of sentence to pass, right? You don't want to expel a kid. So are you comfortable with doing this if the facts suggest that this is the appropriate punishment.
I would never be comfortable doing that, but I might be able to. So I hope people are uncomfortable at a certain level when they find that somebody is going to have penalties imposed. So I think what we're really trying to find out is, would you be able to do this? Because I would think it's just maybe simple.
So I'm just going to change a comfortable statement. Sean?
Yeah, I think that change makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
especially when you think about what Kathy said when you were talking about the death penalty. Like, you're not going to be comfortable giving the death penalty, but if it is the law, you should be comfortable.
Yeah.
And I don't think we should necessarily reject the difference. But,
I think the point of about being able to be not responsible, I think it is also a fair point, is that, as Matt mentioned, like, these folks are fine with maybe a little knowledge of that, and so I want to make sure that they have the knowledge that they can find somebody not responsible. I don't want, so I maybe it's a worried of the question, but I do think it's important that they understand that they have the responsibility to themselves.
Yeah.
No, I mean, well, this question, I think the current version of this line, I was just concerned about question number 12. How do you believe the campus code of conduct to be applied to an ambiguity? I feel like the question itself is too ambiguous. And I don't know how anyone could approach that or adequately answer it. It just seems way too open-ended for me, and I don't know if there's a way to salvage that, or we should just cut it out.
I don't know any answer to question 12.
I think, did we have
everyone?
Or I guess we're just so busy with the others, we didn't really get to it.
Does anybody believe that question 12 should remain in the document?
We're going back to 11. I think perhaps, I think we could just address it, but maybe we want to find it one question, so we can iron it out, and then otherwise we're going to be all over the place.
That's not true.
And I think, so in terms of 12, one of the reasons I was actually out of the meeting when they added it was, the code is not a perfect document. Actually, I met with Michelle this morning and we talked about things that something that might not be considered or covered by the code, and or things that might, in essence, be, the code has some versions where it lists a series of items or has things that are of similar character, and that can introduce some ambiguity. The intent, and I'm open, I think, rewording is actually perfect. But the goal was really to try and say, in essence, almost the question above, how comfortably are you when you're operating in an area where it's not black and white, and it's not clear that even if they did it, that would exactly violate the code? And I think there's another way that could be concerned. I'm not quite into language. The idea is that we live in an imperfect world. At the end of the day, the hearing board is the ones that have to make the decision of, did you do it? And even if you did do it, is that violation, or would you be the violation of the code of conduct?
Yeah, so I agree with Matt. I think that question 12 is incredibly important. However, I think that a big solution would be just changing the end of it to maybe something along the lines of considering ambiguous evidence or circumstances, so it's just a little more clear and it's not just the word ambiguity. Yeah, I agree. I respectfully disagree. I don't think the question is that ambiguous or that open-ended. And if it is, then I think that's part of the reason is that there's lots of ways to approach it. It's not might be something that's difficult to think for the candidate.
No, I mean, I respect that point of view. I just think, inherently, with any legal code, it isn't black and white. There are ambiguities everywhere. People are going to find ambiguities. And I feel like the other questions here allow people to express their judgment or prove that they're going to be their judges. Enough for us to avoid having this really nebulous question. Like, you're right that people can approach in a variety of ways, maybe with help. But at the same time, I don't think we need it there if it's not necessary. And I feel like there are arguments we can make for other questions if it's necessary that I don't think would necessarily apply to this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I would rather have suggested that qualified places something without accident, how they do it. Situations for maintaining that same confidentiality. There's actually no question that we haven't talked about that. That's the first requirement of these tools. And so I think question 12 could be used in a better way. I think that question 10 gets to how they deal with ambiguities and different medical situations in a little bit of a richer way.
Are we done with 11? Because
I don't think we're done with 11 yet.
Okay.
My big thing is if somebody could find a way to consolidate that into one question.
Yeah. So on 11, here's a
question or suggestion about another. So it says, would you be able to find someone not responsible for a violation? Could we just say someone did not? Would you be able to find someone did not violate? If it's code of conduct. Get rid of responsible. I don't like that.
So that's the terminology that's used in our system. But
it's not clear to an applicant. So someone did not violate. And then you can do the same thing with the next, find someone did violate. I just like it better. With 12, I was trying to figure out how I would answer this question myself. So you have ambiguous evidence. There are two ways of doing this. I mean, one is you use precedence. You look at prior decisions. The other way you do it is you refer to spirit or values or general values of the code. Is that what you're after?
All right, I think the answer is there is no right answer to question 12 is my understanding that it's supposed to get at the thinking of the applicants, which goes to the question, do we need to see that? Will we not get
a response? But those would be alternative responses that would be adequate. I'm trying to figure out what we're trying to do. What we're trying to reach in 12. I mean, that's the way I would answer it. But I don't know that applicants are going to get this.
I've seen a couple of years applications when we've had questions been there at some point or another. I mean, generally, I think that's always where you get fairly detailed or fairly not. I mean, the good thing is in a good way to people with a wide range of responses. There is no right answer to it. It really is trying to look at the thought process, which is really what 11, 12, 10, 11, 12 are really looking for. It's okay, what do you do if you disagree with the person? You just say marijuana, we actually can narrow size it and then change the law and look more generally. 11 was okay. You know, 10 is what do you do if you don't agree with provision? 11 is how do you handle provisions that essence result in strong sanctions, including dismissal? And 12 was, well, assume that there's provision and it's not clear, it's ambiguous, or however, how you react in situations to try and form a holistic picture of the thought process and how they serve the board. The three scenarios that you think the committee has passed this thought are somewhat likely to occur. That mainly means it is a personal injury with a situation where you have to consider imposing a very high level, potentially quote unquote academic death penalty. And then also for ambiguity, well, the code, and hopefully, I'll say, the provisions, this isn't quite as essential because it should be easier to parse. However, the fact of the matter is, no matter how you do it, sanctions, there's always something, is it fallen? Where is that line fall? And that is not always clear, and how you react when that line isn't clear.
I feel like the problem is the question is not clear to the regular applicant.
Well, that's what I don't know why that thing. Change it.
But is it necessary? Don't you think that the thinking will be revealed in a lot of the other questions?
Yeah. We're talking about question 12, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. It was ambiguous. So when I see this, I think it's important. However, if I was someone who has zero experience with the campus code of conduct, I'd be like, why is that question there? It isn't, I'm just here to adjudicate. So I would almost err on the side of, I mean, as the CJC has consistently like looked at the code this year, is there a part of the code that you could provide as an example for it and say, an example part of an ambiguous clause of the campus code of conduct is below and have them kind of say, okay, how would I interpret it? I feel like it might be confusing because it might provide, I feel like that might not be beneficial on one hand because it might show how the person thinks on the issue and that would might disqualify them if the committee thinks differently. However, it's hard, but I like the question because I think it's really important to show what level of thinking goes into it. It's like when they interview you for consulting, there's a case and they're looking for how do you think through this question, not necessarily what is your answer. So it's hard.
I respectfully disagree about including an example because you're kind of setting yourself up to failure and be like, look, this provision is bad.
Yeah.
So I'd be a little reticent about doing that. But I don't know, maybe it's just like a law school thing, but I think the question's pretty clear in the way that if this was posed to me, I would say, well, if there's like an ambiguity, let's take a look at the rest of the code. Is this word used in a similar capacity to fit in a way that is in accordance with the rest of the way the code is written. If it's not, what's a common sense way to read this question? Alternatively, is there a literal way to read this that can cross the common sense way?
Yeah. I think, like, I understand Joe's perspective, and I think it would be interesting to have that, but I also don't think it's ideal because of the ideological implications. And, basically asking them to provide their opinion on particular part of the code, which I think is part of the reason we changed number 11 to its current form. But I do think in the logic about this question giving us insight into the applicant's thought process is interesting, but I still am of the opinion that you already see a lot of that with the other questions we provided, and this one is just too general for me to merit one continuing question. Although it isn't the hill I'm going to
die. For the voting members of the committee, can I see a show of hands of fathers who is in favor of keeping some form of
that compromise position might be to keep it as is. And then next year, take a look at the answers that we got and see if it's doing the job that people think it should do. Because unless we have lots of evidence from before, we don't know. So that would be one way to test it. That's even a farm in the
Yeah, so it seems like the conversations about this is a very ambiguous question that's asking for your analysis on ambiguity. I think we've come to an agreement that we're trying to, it's more about how would people think. So I think maybe to clarify the question, maybe ask the committee or whoever's reviewing this application. The committee wants to see how you think about ambiguity. You know, explain the purpose of the question, the beginning of the question, and then proceed with the question. So maybe start with the committee, you know, to review this application, would like to see how you think about or how you manage ambiguity, and then proceed with the question. That would be something I could
hopefully do. Okay. I'm not sure. I mean, I think looking at applications when this happens, I think we're hearing a good answer. I think concern about being too broad, have a potential for obsoleteness. I think potentially narrow the question. In general, just not even a proposal, it's a general idea. Just think something along the lines of, if in a case there's a question as to the meaning or the original code, how would you view and potentially resolve the ambiguity in the case? Something along the lines of words, you're asking, say, here's a concrete, you're in the case, any provision that says something, we're not really sure what it means, how would you go on that? Just try and sort of remove the general, what is an ambiguity? I think frame the question in a way that you know this is a need specialized knowledge or legal background to understand it, but rather just trying to get the core of how do you think and how do you react when you're sort of using the question.
You know, there are two ways of reading that. There are many reasons, but there are two primary. One is, you know, to read it as ambiguity, how do you apply the code to circumstances that were unforeseen? That's one. The other one is, if there's ambiguous evidence and circumstances, would you convict? Mm-hmm. And those are two very different things, and it's not clear. I mean, it's cool that. I agree with recent that it doesn't leave it in there and you know people figure something out. But the question itself is subject to radically different interpretations, it seems to me. In a way that I would just I feel do and call that
third time. I take Richard's point, but I think the way that Matt just rephrased it's all that. Mm-hmm.
Does anybody want to propose the language now, or should we come back to that? Okay. I'm not going to call the vote because I feel like it does clear up the ambiguity of the question that the individual does not have to define what ambiguity is. So, because when you got an instance where the campus code of conduct, it's not clear whether or not it applies.
Yes. So, the language that I have just jotted down on the side of that paper is, and I quote, if in a case there is a question as to the meaning of a specific provision of the code, how would you view and potentially resolve the ambiguity in the case? And I'm obviously an open tweet.
I
actually.
That meaning a specific provision language gets out your point.
Yeah, no, it does. It rules out the conviction.
Is all the ambiguity in the case?
Yes.
Is there anybody who's opposed to that language? Did you hear it first?
One.
Is it in any case?
Oh,
yeah, sorry.
Couldn't you just say resolve this ambiguity? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If there's no objection, I think we should leave question 11. Now, I believe we had a solution to question 13, which currently
are you going to get rid of the other?
Yeah.
And they arise as are we done?
Are we what?
Are we done with the 11?
11? I think that Richard's change is much better. I don't think we're going to include this first portion. Unless somebody believes that the question needs to be raised in here.
Can I? I'm not really quite sure how you're going to get this, but at the meeting, the February 6th meeting, we discussed. I guess we have been discussed earlier about whether the question 10.
But the problem was initially the question 10 and 13 were a little bit redundant.
That was not my memory of what question 10 was on that issue. I thought that question 10 was an issue.
It's a little bit leading.
Yeah, because it emphasizes the recusal. It seems to favor the answer that you should recuse yourself when you disagree with personally disagree with the provision of the code. Would you recuse yourself? It seems to me it pushes towards that. I mean, one of the things about asking questions is this is an application, but it's also a little bit like questioning the jury. And when you do jury questions, you're educating the jury, you're not really just getting them. And so we're educating applicants when we ask them questions. And it seems to me that I came around in the discussion to thinking that question 10 really seems to educate somebody towards the recusal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
And then actually, I think we've discussed that meeting. I the way you read it, like, assuming I had no prior background I completely see. That's in essence, almost the question or the answer, or you think you don't know any better. You say, oh, the answer, but I repeat myself. Well, sounds like a good idea. I almost think what we do is, honestly, it's just like, reduce, as in, would you, I would say, would you potentially penalize an individual for a violation? I leave that part, because that is an open-ended question. Open-ended, where there's no correct answer to that. And frankly, that's also the first part where I think there is proper to educate people that you have to disagree with the version, you can still force it. Actually, I remember someone once said, I would try and counsel everyone to avoid the code and then, in essence, do jury nullification. Yeah. But I'm personally able to recuse yourself in your hearing panel and then hear the comments, but where it doesn't say to then just leave it as or take it in course of action. So, for instance, 1 year we had someone say, I would do it, however, I would ask the JA to register our concerns, or I would have the case mentioned in the UA. That's just the idea that your friend escalated. I think that was generally seems a good answer. So I just make counter recommendations, especially the strike put down for this highlight.
Jason.
I wanted to tell this, but I thought Michelle's point about how we don't have a question about confidentiality was important. I was wondering if we could add different question 14, making the current question those 14 under 15. I think that question would be able to keep everything in these proceedings confidential.
I would actually put that in front of the questions where it's the yes or no answers, where it's the are you your graduation, are you able to continue green area, train, I was put the front. Because, I mean, that is the yes or no answer, and you say no, well, it's one of them, it's a lot higher.
And I know that's like, a, obviously they're going to say yes, but I think it's more than a signaling.
Honestly, someone said once no, they refused to go to training. So, I mean, you'd be surprised.
Did we take them?
No, we didn't.
So, would you be able to keep
everything from these proceedings? Or everything you learn from these proceedings?
Or respect the confidentiality.
Would you be able to respect
the confidentiality of all the proceedings?
I would require confidentiality because not everything is I mean, if you learn about the code and you want to learn the code, that's not confidential. It's the case itself that's confidential.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I'm not going to tell people about the code.
I'm just saying it when their language was anything before.
Yeah, like the confidentiality of the party.
Yeah, I was just saying that the language was pretty.
Yeah.
It's not there.
So, we're not done with Ken, right?
You're definitely not done with Ken.
Okay. So I was looking at this. I think I would strike the third, everything after the second sentence.
How would you respond?
Yeah, so everything after how would you respond?
Please explain the reasoning.
Yeah. Just strike that third sentence.
Is there any objection? That is true. So now, the big problems we have left, that if we wanted to adjust something slightly with the options in question 13, I forgot exactly what that was, and the big little problems in question 9 as well.
And there's also the wording of question
11.
I would like to read one. Let's see. It was an issue about the... is there anything? Well, I'll find it. There was something. I'll look in the minutes. I've raised it, and I'll let you know. There was something else. Question 8.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think somebody thought it would be better.
I think it's written in the subjunctive, because if you were it depends on how you read it.
I think
so
it
has
also,
to be if you had been, if you
it's
if
not
has been.
If you're not in the proceedings.
Yeah, or if you were subject, it sounds like a condition is sort of a subjunctive thing if this were to happen to you. What's that?
I haven't heard that in a while.
It's not anything to do with English grammar training, it's French. It's the only way I've heard about this subjunctive.
There was also a discussion about phrasing the question to make disclosure optional.
Yeah, we've talked about
that. Absolutely. I guess just to make sure. I was asked that. When we move these questions, we're jumping around a lot just to make sure we get this right. We're going to handle a question, we address that question, and then move on instead of just jumping in a little bit. But the question number 8, we're on, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead. And I agree with Michelle's point. I mean, I can tell you this is one of the older questions that's been around since as long as I've been here. And actually, I kind of talked to Kathy about it. This is a question that historically has given us the best responses, such that people have said, some people say one through minors for alcohol or whatever, and they, in essence, explain what they did, they explain how it helped them, their experience process, whether that be at Cornell, someone once mentioned active integrity. No one's ever mentioned any egregious. But that being said, I think it gave a lot of insight into how they see the process and how they almost get the deal. Okay, I've been through the side, I understand that, I'm willing to understand that. That being said, I think some of Michelle's concerns are good. I was toying with the idea, potentially, instead of we expect you to share all of the discipline and just leave, having been disciplined, or I guess that's a happy point, but if you have been disciplined, it does not, and then leave the confidentiality, in essence, because that's not how the way it's worded. It's, you cannot disagree, it's asking for everything. I think making it, removing that, and I've heard people lie in the past. And that's just the reality of it. I think the question has a lot of value in terms of the thought process. If someone's willing to talk about it, it's valuable. You also could want it, change it to hypothetical. So if you have been or were to be, how would you almost do? I almost love to speak of hypothetical. So it's just that, well, hypothetically, I would travel with alcohol, whether it happened or not. That might help. That's a good thought.
So there's nothing in our code that requires a person to be in good standing to serve on any of our boards. And I think it's really key to remember that once a person has completed whatever same thing they need to do, they're back in good standing with their community. And so you're asking a question that has no, there's no criteria that somebody have a good private standing. And so I think what's really important is the idea that why are you asking a question that's an unfair criteria? It's like asking me, like, you have 7 cents in your pocket. I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. Nothing in the code says that I have to have 7 cents in my pocket, right? Like, that's the idea. And so I think this is being a little bit nosy. I think we're not really respecting the learning and growth that happens in people.
No, I respectfully disagree with that. And so far as this committee is empowered to view a ask questions that we find are relevant, I personally think, just as a juror, has ever had an encounter with law enforcement, it's relevant to their perspective and information. That I've said, I have certain people apply this way. However, I have seen truly phenomenal answers to this. This is showing people have a critical response and how they work and how fast the discipline or an account system has informed their perspective. Frankly, for the one said, this is part of the reason I wanted to serve on the boards. I think that there are, I mean, again, I think we are well within our rights to ask it. I think we want to get clear that I personally still think making it not explicit optional, but rather striking that one person is best. If the committee truly feels that way, I wouldn't be opposed to making it more than it's optional. But I think it's a value to ask if the answers are valuable when we're thinking about the process.
I would visually see on the speaker's list, but right now, quickly show what it would look like to remove that section. Of course, we'll add at the beginning of the sentence, but that would be like right now to remove essentially the, if we want to make it even clearer, to add something there that says you do not have to disclose all these instances. What happened? Richard?
Well, I would instruct the whole second sentence. And so if you have been subject to discipline, et cetera, and anything you disclose is probably better than such disclosures. So the third sentence, I strike the second sentence. First sentence stands as it is. The third sentence, such disclosures, I would change that to the anything you disclose will be treated confidential. It's just,
I mean, Michelle's right. I mean, we should strike the whole thing, particularly since, you know, like you said, you're eligible to be on the board. Saying it doesn't automatically exclude you sounds like it might exclude you. I do think that somebody who's very good, like, I could picture, I was trying to put myself in a position reading that, because reading it might really piss me off. If he asked that, you know, something that I've been told is confidential now, and we really want you to disclose something that's considered confidential. I think you're right. I think we should strike it. And I think this is a pretty long application. I mean, it's not like every one of them requires an essay or anything like that, but pretty long application. I agree. I think it's an application, of course.
I just told the thing I was going to ask is that if you're, I'll wait to how much choice for your thoughts.
I think, Reese, I mean, I think I may have slight divergence of Reese's point, but I definitely agree. As was the, does not automatically exclude you. If we were three kids, I would say we should strike automatically. It does not exclude you, full stop. If you're in good standing, you're in good standing. And that point is very well taken.
But you're not checking it. That's the thing. So if somebody, if you're testing somebody's veracity on this and you're not going to sign it perfectly, so check with the J's office to find out if you're standing. What's the point of asking the question? Right? Like that's what you're coming with. Either you're going to have somebody sign a perfect release, say we're going to check whether you're being honest and truthful with us, and say that doesn't really matter for your consideration, or we're going to say like, you trust anyone who's not suspended or dismissed is eligible to sit out for 4 weeks.
I think the purpose of the question is not that I have certain people buy on it. To me, the goal is not to run out because our cross referencing this. To me, it's, I think, the value in saying, how does your, and you know, perhaps this might be a better way, but how does your prior experience in life, whether that means this, but the more I think about it, the more nebulous it becomes. I personally see good answers to the question, which is why I have some attached, some phases of it. If you feel strongly it's no longer necessary, I'm confident that you find qualified applicants. I just, again, I think the perspective that people who have answered this question and said, oh, I was subject to X, Y, or Z, and employee agreements or whatever, was valuable consideration, but the committee is trying in the direction of striking it. Michelle?
Yeah, I think, I do think this question has a lot of potential to get good answers. But at the same time, I am concerned about violating people's privacy. And I think personally, if I read it, if I had been previously channelized under a sort of conduct, I would probably perceive this question as disqualifying me from the position, regardless of whether you put a disclaimer in there or not, sadly. And some people might apply anyway, but my view of the whole thing is that if someone is in good standing, we should not hold their previous penalties against them. So for that reason, I think we could get rid of this question. I think maybe we could also keep it if we can somehow word it to be better, but there just doesn't seem to be a winning position either way right now.
So this question is a little bit odd because it's one that not everybody can answer because some people have not been convicted of anything. So one way to do it would be to change it, say, think of someone. If someone had been subject to discipline at Cornell or elsewhere, please explain how this experience might make them a more conscientious member. Then you get rid of all the confidentiality, but you're still, if they want to report that, they can. And just strike the last two sentences. Then it's something that everybody can answer. And it doesn't raise the eligibility question.
I think that the points made against the question are very good. I don't feel super strongly one way or another about it. However, I think from a consequentialist output perspective, if you look at the responses where you see people have a lot more empathy and awareness about like people who could potentially get into some trouble and not have any ill will, etc., then you could have a more robust board that has a wide variety of experiences, which might be better for students to have like a holistic perspective of their actions if you're able to get people who have kind of like been through things before. So for that reason, I see the value.
But what if we follow Sean's line of thinking that even having a question removes a lot of those individuals from completing the application itself?
That's the question. When we send these things out and say who's qualified to apply, does it make sense to add something that says that you are not disqualified? Or you're still eligible even if you have violated the code, because then you get the information about having to slide into this question.
Yeah.
And I think that is good information. Well, I have
could we also word it like it won't be held against? I think because the answer could be held against people, the fact that you violated the code will not be held against you. If we can word it that way, I think that would be less likely to discourage. Instead of saying, oh, you may still get on even if you have violence, which I think is more, it sounds more exclusionary, regardless of whether it's
But
also, I think if you put it in the question too, it can't hurt. even though it might make it a bit longer, but I don't want people to see that.
Well, people come into our office that are 18 years old, they get their first alcohol violation, they come with their bags packed. Like, they call us, like, I have to check on my dorm because I know you're going to get out of school for alcohol. Right? They come in, they're like, this is it, this is what's going to happen. But these are the students who want on these boards, the ones who have the inherent responsibility. And I think that even though we tell students, you know, we have an alcohol violation, we have the basics, we have the paper, it's going to be on, they're not going to apply to this. Like, we can tell them all the time. I think saying, you know, as a past one of history does not deter you. Mom, we even need to put it in their mind, right? Like, if a student is here, they're in good standing, right? Even if they're on probation, there's nothing in the code that says that they can't serve. So, the idea of even trying to limit that, I think we need to say that anybody who's a current student at this campus is eligible to serve on the boards. Please don't put anything that would defer students who think that this is an opportunity that they can serve.
I really, I don't doubt it, but I completely agree that that's the recent point. We send a campus by email to undergrad staff and the application out. I think it can't hurt to put in there that you have a past conduct history that does not include your eligible service. Because I think it's Chuck's point. If I have an alcohol violation, I would not even think to apply. I would see it and go, oh, I can't serve on that unless you put it in an email. That's just, I think that people might even get to the question if you don't put something in an email or notification that goes to serve. I think that's an excellent suggestion. Maybe just do it the office somebody for the emails. In terms of Richard's suggestion, though, actually something similar actually occurred to me. But I think perhaps one change to something along the lines of How do you believe going through this whole process affects someone's outlook or experience at Cornell? Because I can see someone that wanted to answering, here's how it affects experience because I went through it. But you can absolutely and completely answer the question without even touching on the experience that you have disclosed. Because I think if someone wants to disclose, I think it absolutely gives great answers to Michelle's point. I have personally advocated for people who said, I was like, how do you respond to Cornell College? Will be good board members for those are the reasons you outline. Those are the people you want the board. And I think arranging the questions such as how do you think it affects people is a question that also gives people in mind that there are people on the other end of this, but it also gives some the opportunity to say, well, actually, I know how it affects people because I believe it's necessary.
I think my view of the whole thing is in terms of the information we provide, encouraging people to this board, we should definitely include something that does having a previous penalty. Will not hurt your chance to get. Because I do think, I agree with Michelle, but I also think if you don't include that disclosure like Matt said, people will think, oh, I'm not going to be eligible. Because there's got to be people like me. And since I've been on the other team, there's no reason. But I don't think the question will still discourage people if they open it up. So I kind of like, I think Richard's alignment question would be a lot better than what we have now. And it would give them the opportunity if they wanted to. Disclose their own experience with the code. Possibly have that benefit from the view. So that's my opinion.
Richard, what are the possibilities?
Well, yeah, this is just an information question. Something like 8-9% of all the students violated the code?
Yes, 625. This is last year.
How many?
625.
So 625 on the product was 2400 towards. Yeah, so it's a significant. It's a significant.
That's
all. So, I mean, what I suggested was if someone had been subject to discipline either at Cornell or elsewhere. Please explain how their experience might make them a more conscientious board member. Then you just strike the next two sentences.
One more.
Yes, I was about to follow up. So we can see if we can we have two possible alternatives. Just ask me outright, how are you using disciplinary experience related to the board number, or asking about the extra experience level. Now, that being said, overall, can I call for a vote now? Who is in favor of striking any vote with this question?
Striking entirely and not replacing?
Striking entirely and not replacing. Any form of this question? Who's in favor of that? Who's opposed to striking? With that, for now, we are striking question 8 and we are going to proceed with the application. If we have time, if somebody wants to propose language, clear if you select that. Question 9, you discussed how referring to any failures of the office of the JAO on the application might be misleading individuals and experience in the committee and how they prepare to deal with it. And it creates the expectation that hearings go wrong because of the JAO not doing their job correctly. I'm going to start with you, Michelle, do you have any comments on the previous question? Why should we take the issue?
Yeah, I think there's an important procedural check in the system that both parties. So I think if the question says the code has prescribed timelines for certain events, if either the parties involved in a hearing did not adhere to that, what would you do?
If there are time on the time to hear Joe, what is the question?
What would you do as a board member? Something just kind of understand it.
I don't have it. Somebody else was saying that. Does anybody have any comments on question 9?
I think for some of the community, I think there's no reason to simply call the JA's office as being the villain in this situation. I think Michelle's question is getting to a good place. I think some of the context is useful. And I would genericize a little bit more and say, this question, assuming the code requires, I would, instead of the 1 week before a hearing, I would just go to, this is witnesses and exhibits. So I would go, for this question, assume the code requires parties to provide a list of witnesses and exhibits for a hearing at least 3 days prior. Suppose you're on a panel in which you didn't abide by the code, however, a party provided notice, and then I just make sure we're outside of the, we still have some setups, but it's very clear that it's a party, which would mean both parties.
So suppose you were on a panel hearing a case in which you believe,
that's fine.
Or in which, not even you believe, in which.
Well, I think it's, in essence, the question is trying to set up that, because it's trying to say, in essence, even if you think someone did something wrong, how do you view a procedural defect driving the whole case? I would leave that language personally.
Yeah.
I think the direction is fine, but it doesn't make any sense to say, you think somebody violated the accused violated the code, and either party that doesn't do that, well, then I violated the code, and I'm a special victim.
That's
so,
yeah. Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing, but the default is innocence. Because that's the case, the question has to address the prosecution of the case. It's the question is an interesting one. But it is biased in the way that Michelle is putting it out. It's still a question. What do you do with procedural violations? Okay. We sort of covered this. I'm not sure it's still really meaningful.
Okay.
You just say, you
Yeah. I mean, I think realistically, I think that's what we need in here, the procedural defect.
And I think we do want to keep the advisor representing the not accused individual. What was the language we
you can put the
individual charged with a violation of the code.
Yeah, that's fine. As I asked, you notice a procedural defect. I think that really does. The goal is, this is what happens when something goes wrong and things go wrong on both sides. One part, we think that the advisor has raised it. What do you do and how do you react? It allows for discussion, it allows for people to explain. And I mean, most of these applications, when we get them, questions like we have, maybe a 2 or 3 page application, and that's including questions where it's questions are interposed. But it's not like people do not have novels, but because you want to understand why they're doing this and how people are going to affect that here.
Lovely. Not actually. There is a certain figure that not
be
public.
Just this
second. I didn't mean to get there.
You can use it, suppose you're on a panel hearing in a case in which you know that that's what you see. You were supposed.
I mean, they're important procedural irregularities, and they're unimportant procedural irregularities. If you're not going to name what the procedural regularity is, you're not going to get
Well, Richard, that was important to point out, which you might want something to say. Depending on what it is, I would weigh it and then do, if it was egregious, consider doing something. If it was minor, I would move on as harmless error.
I think what I would, then if that's what you're after, then I would ask for an example of a serious procedural irregularity and how that would be distinguished from a non-important and how they would reach that determination.
Any suggestions for changing this question?
We're just asking them. What we're getting rid of is please strike it so I can take care of it.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think to Richard's point, I think we can go minimalist. I think Richard's point is also well taken that. We should have some meat on the bone, so to speak, so we can have some context. I personally think if you were asking me this question, absolutely, I mean, I have too much knowledge, but about this process to act like I don't even know. But my default would be, well, what procedures have we followed from Mr. Richard's point? So we could say big filing or notice requirements. You could provide a little bit of generic context. I think to Michelle's point, it's hard to pull an exact scenario without having someone be the villain. Someone has to have made a mistake in my book for you to have a procedural defect unless you're generic. And I agree to the point we don't want to necessarily say it's the chain's office. There is no other party. I think you could say something along the lines of, suppose you're on a panel here in a case, during the proceedings, you notice that certain notice provisions or certain, I have a hard time being necessarily broad, without going down the rabbit hole, explain which party is culpable, because I guarantee the question will be, well, the someone waves, it's not your deal. And I'm right, which I apologize.
I take your point, Richard, but I think that we're going to get back to the original question that we had if we tried to add so much. I think like leaving it just a little bit more open-ended isn't the worst thing, because it allows the candidate to kind of elaborate more from their perspective.
You might say what procedural irregularities would affect your decision.
Like a parenthesis.
And to do it that way. I was thinking, Matt, how to get guilt out of this responsibility. Maybe there's a snowstorm. There's a snowstorm. Witnesses could not hear. But I think almost anything like that to paint a scenario is going to bias the question. And because of that, I'm not sure this question is doing the work you want. I mean, the procedural irregularities, some of them are going to be important when you phrase them. It's going to be immediately obvious they're important. And they're not. They're just timing questions, for example. One day off. I think we just signed it.
Were you raising your questions?
I mean, I was thinking one thing you could do is say something after have not been followed. Something along the lines of, for example, I'll say accused, for lack of a better term, the accused did not received a witness list one day before the hearing rather than the 3 days as required. Now, of course, that seems like a witness list just comes down from heaven, but that could at least make it more concrete. Or receive,
Is this still set up the same problem with the JA?
That was the. I makes it a little bit vague, but I think we'll forget that it's fine. So I think the questions of the importance of online procedure or something, but I kind of agree with Richard, I don't know for what I think the intention of this question was to be, how are you going to make sure the JA does its job, right? That was the historical context of it. And so if that's not your goal to make sure that they would get checked on the system because you have those questions elsewhere, then I think you're a little bit superfluous.
I also do want to note that it is 6 p.m.
You can stand by 15 minutes and finish that somewhere.
Is there any objection? And I also want to note that we are meeting next Wednesday, the day for students, at least, is the day after we return to February break.
If you get February break.
Well,
February break. So for undergraduates. I'm hoping that we can leave the next 15 minutes with these questions more or less completed. But I'll come with a clear draft of all the amendments, so we can start the meeting of voting on that. The UA is not meeting between now and next Wednesday. The UA will be meeting the following Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay, just to clarify, we're not talking about the amendments.
The amendments to the code.
To the code, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have enough time tonight. And
just in case we have had to be.
Yeah, in the next 15 minutes, I don't think we're going to be able to do most of the conversation on the code. We'll have all of the experts meeting, assuming that anyone is going to leave this room with serious disagreements with how we end this application. So, on this question, we're still here, Matt.
I didn't think I would run out. With assuming, and I may be off my water, but the question that is being done, right now we have, I believe, 15 questions. There are 7 housekeeping, which are all for yes or no, when you graduate. This is 30-second or less response questions. We have 1 fair response question, and then we have, I believe, 6 or maybe 7 situational questions. So, I mean, even if the application goes a little long, we only really, 6 or 7, 50% of questions that are actually substantive, not on pre-response. Occasionally people put something in there. In theory, that could actually come up a home for someone to say, I was under discipline. But looking at it, I think Richard's point, and I Michelle's point, I struggle because I do not want to villainize the JA's office. I do have some work, and they do have important plan or bad reputation. However, I'm also cognizant of the fact that.
Stop it, Earl.
It's part of me is also cognizant of our the idea that there are procedural protections in the code that are designed to protect, in theory, both parties, but they do tilt towards more towards the respondent. And I think Richard's point is we're trying to figure out, and we want to ask questions about this. It's primarily if someone waives their timelines, that's fine. Generally, it's my experience. Michelle, I should ask your opinion. How do the JCC or complainants, do they frequently miss deadlines? Or actually, are deadlines missed frequently at all?
To my knowledge, when the hearing board last week, in which the respondents submitted information after business hours that the hearing board let in, but besides that, there was, in that same case, there was back and forth. How much was being submitted and when. And so I would say that's the rarity. As you guys saw that pre-hearing guide that we sent out with respondents, we actually map out the minutes and everything. So people are either pretty responsible or they actually just don't show up the hearing.
Yeah. I'm getting a little geeky here, but it occurred to me that this question I was initially thinking of it as a question about what do you think the impact is of procedural errors on the substantive decision. But actually what the question is really asking in terms of the advisor not raising it and what we can do is how active should we be at the hearing board members in raising procedural errors that are raised by the other party. So those are two different questions. And it may be actually that the, in terms of what we can achieve, that how active we should be as a hearing board member is a relevant question if we can use relevant questions. And it actually is a very real issue. I mean, I've been an arbitrator before, and it kills me to see people make errors. And they're going, oh, you know, I mean, it's really a question about what is your goal as running the show, how much going to be. I think that might be a major work for somebody how active as a board member you think you should be. So if we were to do it in that way, so that issue, then we avoid the question of do you think procedures should affect substance.
After listening to the session I'm leaning towards not having a it seems like something of literature training rather than something else. It's rather than something you should know or have to think about before you get in, rather than, okay, great, we answered all of these other things with a lot of discussion. Now we can equip you with the right procedures to follow.
Yeah. Like this point, but one of the things that we're just going to do is to police the procedure. And one thing to have an incentive for the procedures to follow. So, yeah, on the one hand, we're asking for judgment. If the procedure weren't followed, what would we do? On the other hand, we want them to release those procedures, so we want them to count. What's the point? And we want them to be the same person. And I'm not sure the question's going to get at that. That's
well, it takes some level of experience to understand that. Yeah. So are we asking people to come with those that thoughtful quality and that knowledge, or are we just saying, are you somebody who thinks that you could care and completely will be open to the difficult questions?
But what are the, one way of doing it is, what are the factors that can influence your judgment as to how many regular and simple meaning?
Instead of trying to create the hypo, we're looking for the abstract of what do you do with the procedural clause. The answer could be, oh, you can follow the procedure strictly. We'll weigh that. Or it must be, or it could be, you know what, I would evaluate, is it harmless error, or is it very prejudicial? I think by grouping that with the ambiguity question might make more sense. It also takes it a little more isolation because the grouping is not, I don't think, suggestive.
Have other categories other than
people as well. Yeah, right. So the ambiguity question, I have to pull it up.
Yeah.
Revised one. I was going, my suggestion is, okay, so that would be some, yeah, there we are. Okay. So, yes. So I would create something on the line. Assuming you're on a case, assuming you're stricken on a hearing color, and the following situations arise, how would you react? A.
So in this, it's, this is going to be a
three-part question.
Okay. And this is one of the parts.
Yes. Nicely.
Okay. So you're serving on the hearing board.
How would you react if any of the following scenarios were to occur? Then sub A would be, if in a case, it would be, there is a question. And then B would be, there is a defect or procedure. There's a failure by one of the parties to follow procedures, follow hearing procedures, and there's and C would be an accused advisor does not raise
an advisor to be accused.
Yes, that's what I read.
And I'm still sticking with the fact that we're not being accused. Is that okay?
And yes,
an advisor to someone charged with the court.
So relevant to the proceeding.
Is that listed in B, make prescribe? There's a question about the construction.
Did you just say objection to procedural error? No matter what you do, somebody's reading out.
We make it singular, they perceive it. So, yeah.
I'm just wondering if people bring up that.
There's this is a little bit oddly constructed. So, how would you react if any of the following? I'd say one instead of any. So, how would you react if one of the following were? Hey, get rid of scenarios. One of the following would occur. We have one of the following would occur. That now it's isolated, so it's not any. Okay. You want a question marks?
Now question the part A has the secondary question to the other ones.
I think you can really simplify A. You could say a provision of the code is ambiguous. I don't think you need specific.
Okay.
Or the provision.
A relevant provision of the code?
Yeah, the relevant provision. Yes, that's right. There's a failure. Sorry, Nicole.
I think this question is getting to be way too intimidating with like the three parts. If I was an undergrad, I would be so scared looking at this. Especially like part B and C are just kind of like, I would try to do the right thing, whatever it is.
I
think those are a little bit more like things that you can
trace and so on. I've been worried about this too. I mean, the questionnaire is something that you're filling out. You haven't made a decision to apply yet. And if it's an intimidating, it looks like it's going to take up a long time. And you're going to start people midstream. It's worried me a bit.
So, regardless, do we want to cut question nine?
Yeah, that's
no. Question nine. We're cut question nine. This is gone. We're not sure what this is on the question.
So
I think on 10, if we're going to include additional words,
so this is the bottom of the block under 10. This is the timelines question right now, number 10. Well, this is the question that we're now on. This is the question, if you see a violation in the proceedings, how do you react? We're trying to fuse it now into questions and problems.
I think the way we're fusing and moving questions.
We've just lost one. The meeting is now officially over. I'm going to continue with discussion and continue taking notes. We're going to do a final vote on all of this next week.
So looking at where we've gone with this, we have 7 housekeeping questions. I think this was the big version. We're down to 4 or 5 substantive questions, which is really not a lot. I mean, yes, this is a long question. I think we can break it out. But I think the way, in terms of, it's better to mesh the ambiguity, the procedural defect, and the dereliction of the advisor. I think that's valuable because that doesn't show it. I think they tend to go together, and there are also 3 distinct things that might happen. They're also, my estimation, not trying to force you late at all, just saying, here's how they go. I think think that is a good way to condense question 10 into here. I think we can definitely finesse the wording to make it more clear and potentially space it so it's not a wall of text. But I think having essentially three distinct questions is surplusage, and that it doesn't just add this whole number and you go, oh god, I have 20 of these things. So I would favor, and this is right now the question after it is, if I recall, is the refusal about time. So I mean, that's also a three-part question. So I stressed, you go ABC, ABC, and then anything else you want to discuss. I think it works, especially once we clean up all the edited text and have a finalized version.
So now the questions that would be extended response questions to start with, please describe in your own words what the university here and your boards are and the role they play in Cornell's judicial system. Question 10.
Yeah.
Anyone object to that?
Actually, I mean, the title is judicial administrator. I mean, so I mean, it is called the court. I mean, it is referred to as a great judicial system. It is a judicial system. I mean, I would say the code probably doesn't have to do it. It'll be free.
Okay.
Then we have question 9 has been cut. Question 10 currently reads, and we're probably going to cut this for the 13th exposure. On the panel here, in case during the proceedings, you notice a certain procedure not to follow. For example, the individual charges of violation of civil disciplines is only one day before the hearing rather than 3 days. The advisor representing the individual does not raise these people's charges automatically. Yeah. Question 11 now reads, assume you are asked to serve on the hearing panel concerning a provision of a code that you personally disagree. How would you respond? Please explain the reason. Question 12 now reads, assume you are serving on the hearing board, how would you react if one of the following were to occur? A, the relevant provision of the code is ambiguous. B, there is a failure for one of the parties to follow the hearing procedures as they are prescribed in the code. C, an advisor to an individual charged with a violation of the code is not making an objection. 2, a procedural error. And then question 14 is the questions basically seeing whether the individual would feel that it's appropriate for them to accuse themselves. And 15 is anything else.
Number 14, you should it be a case about which you have read or heard paramount?
Like, when I think correct or no? Which it means. Okay. Assuming we were just the same with this discussion, we strike question 10. That leaves us with the question of one, question one, the response, which is role of the process in your in what they do. Then you have the next one, which is, and you have the written disagree with. Then you have the three-part question about ambiguity, the procedures, and the advisor. And then you have the refusal. So there's a total of 4 questions. I think those questions tend to go around to specific incidences, general procedures, as well as also its refusal, which I think is an important one. So I think 4 is good. I would ask, and this is almost going back, worried more about the conduct and what you've done in the past. I still feel like we might be missing one question about this is how you see the process, and then we can tack this on to the what is the role. How you see this, the impact of the process. So in terms of question 9, what we talked about, we got rid of the or 8, which was a discipline question. I always wonder, would you want to reintroduce the question on the lines of, in essence, how do you see going through this process affecting someone? And then, in essence, because you're looking at the empathy of it and also almost educating and saying that there are real people involved. And I would hope someone would say respectful, open mind, etc. I think having something on those lines might be good for their, how they see the process affecting other people. That being said, I know this is going to be for a while, so
I have something really minor. So, go to down there. So, B, a case involving someone you know personally.
This is just better than
you. it is an odd way to phrase it.
So, someone involving someone you know personally. Yeah. That.
Can I make a suggestion along the lines of what that was raising? Remember
fine. I guess because it's not adding to time. The one that says please describe what the, you know, in your own words, what you're hearing. And then people exclude, you know. Maybe that's some place where either the additional part of that question or another question afterwards could be along the lines of how would you describe more role as a member of one of those boards, or I think along the lines of what Michelle was raising before, you know, what is your role? What would your, how would you describe what your role would be as a member of a hearing or review board to ensure that this is a fair and full and fair proceeding?
I think that would also be looked at in this question. We might also want to consider something on Matt's point about not just fairness, but in terms of it as a learning experience. So we can ask a question, I think, but then you want a question 9 because we say, how does going through this procedure help the accused individual in the process? And I don't know if you want to answer that.
Yeah, but the idea of something being, and one of those, what is your role? Because this is a very general, I think, the role of these boards. But if what we want to do is to think about how you see your role as a member of the hearing board or review board, then that I think could ask somebody get it more along the lines of what is their vision of fairness. So I don't have the exact words right now, but something along those lines, I think would take care of some of the things you have to get at. And even though I like threes, I'm not so sure about having that. I just think it's confusing. It would be confusing if you
not a final question about that, but I think you also need two things in the process, right? So as much as we want a student who punches another student in the face to realize that they shouldn't be doing that, we also have to remember that the student who was punched in the face needs to be represented in the process. So if we're talking about how do you expect your role to learn and develop with them. How else are you going to enforce the values there? So just, and I want to make sure that the JCCs are okay with the question number 9 about the advisor, because I do think that's in a negative light, even though the JCCs are great. It's usually the non-criminal advisor decision.
Which question do you
have? The one where I talked about the example.
I think the understanding is we're probably looking at this question.
I would actually move that to take an argument. How did just
I don't want to cut all the text, I don't want to lose it, so you're right, right. But I do have a vision of this one.
Yes, so I like Matt's suggestion. One of the things that we're not looking at yet is the effect on either the person charged with the violation or whoever was the subject of the violation. So when they're looking at just that, there's a formal guilt or innocence, and then there's the effect it's going to have on their lives. And then some way of wording it in such a way that might get so much of learning. I think learning is the most important thing, but the extracurricular factors.
I think there's agreement on this notion of the reflective aspect.
I guess two brief points. One, it's an easy to conduct interviews. And we actually were hoping to do that last year with some of the finalists. Difficult issues that we not just get happening this year, we're taking steps to start this early. When we have a selection subcommittee, we are hopeful we'll rank you on a 1-5, 1-10 point scale. And then clearly there's some real concerns about and happy to see. There are people who see something. We are free to ask people come into an interview and talk with them and then have and make our decision afterwards. Also, I think through Richard's point and then Grace's point, along with questions across the language about how do you really going through this in the process of Cornell affects an individual experience at Cornell. We're in the way to try this, not something of a complaint, it's not something of a response. It's talking about how does
someone going through this process from any point of view affect their experience? Try and almost get at the how do you see this, how do you see this working and how do you see it affecting? I mean, knowing that I think we're well over time, I'm happy to distribute that in the email or to Dale and we can talk about it briefly the next time. But I think that's something that might satisfy some of the things that Richard and some of my stuff have brought forward is maybe one more way to friendly that.
With that, I think I'm going to close the discussion. Is there anything that anybody would like to specifically prepare for next week's meeting? Mm-hmm. I would ask.
That's it cleans up.
Yes, red line of some sort of version, so we can easily vote on the passing decision.
Exactly, and then also once we see it, then we can also maybe we want to have. And I'm happy to circulate draft language in advance, so it's not a real thing. But in an hour, maybe that. Just
if you want to circulate that, one, sir,
that's what that's all about. Yeah.
I have a request to next time on the I had thought that it was going to look that we would put in a version that could actually be a little longer for me, and I think that would be really helpful for starting out.
It's not
yet. It's very useful. Sorry. It's not quite there.
I don't even know if you had a chance to get pizza.
No.
Were there anchovies?
Yes.
Oh, there were anchovies. I just assumed there weren't any anchovies.
I told you, we got all the anchovies. Everything you were trusting except for.